Welcome to Better Sex. I'm your host, Matthew Chambers. Each episode, I aim to have conversations with culturally and spiritually engaging guests. Some you'll know, and some you won't. Some you'll agree with, and some you won't. But hopefully all of us will come away challenged. Hopefully all of us will come away a little bit wiser. Hopefully we'll seek and find maybe a more empathetic view of humanity, or a more expansive view of spirituality, perhaps even a deeper view of how to navigate the life we've been given. I'm still learning my way around this whole podcast business, so please bear with me as I figure out microphones and sound and levels and making sure the Wi-Fi works properly the entire time. These conversations are absolutely worth it. I promise. Today, I'm so excited to welcome Jeannie Gaffigan. Jeannie is married to comedian Jim Gaffigan. They have five kids and live in New York City. Jeannie is also a writer and producer and active Catholic. In several of Jim's comedy bits, he even jokingly refers to her as a Shiite Catholic. You'll understand a little bit more about that during the discussion today, as Jeannie shares openly and passionately about how much her faith informs every part of her personal and public life. A few years back, she was diagnosed with a benign brain tumor that put their entire lives on hold. She underwent a 9-hour surgery and months of recovery and subsequent treatments to repair her vocal cords. Jeannie shared with me that her recovery will actually be a lifelong journey. When lockdowns due to COVID-19 saw Jim's comedy tour canceled earlier this year, Jeannie immediately began organizing efforts to support vulnerable populations and frontline workers who were putting in hours around the clock in New York City. Our chat today covers lots of experiences over the past few months, including what happened the night in August when Jim went viral in a now infamous tweet storm during the Republican National Convention. I love Jeannie's candor, humor, and humanity she shares here, and I know you'll appreciate her takes on faith, learning as a mom of five, and leading in complicated days. So let's get to it. Please, sit back, relax. I hope you enjoy Better Sex. Jeannie Gaffigan, thank you for joining me today. I'm so grateful, actually, for your time. And
thank you for making it work. I really appreciate you working with my schedule and being so open to the craziness.
Well, again, from one big family to another, this managing lots of details on a daily basis.
You speak the same language.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Well, so you guys have navigated the pandemic this year so far from the wild city of New York, and what has it been like for the Gaffigan family to sort of manage these days this year?
Well, as it has been for everyone, which unifies us as a family. It should have unified us all as a family, because no matter what circumstances we're in, and I know that people with kids have a completely different experience with people without kids, but it's been a challenge in some way for everyone in how it affects them. But one of the things that has really united us and made me really look at the situation here with the pandemic as I normally do, and I write about this in my book about how when I got diagnosed with a brain tumor, I had to frame it in a metaphysical way. Like, what is God doing in my life? So instead of being like, why me, God? Why a brain tumor for me? It was like, okay, this is happening. Like, I can't deny that this is happening. And so let's look at what possibly could be the reasoning and what is being asked of me right now. So at the same time, the pandemic hit at a point where I was also in a bubble where I really didn't feel like I could just handle one more thing. Was at a point where Jim was out of town. He was in Latin America, and the kids were about to go on spring break, and we were all about to get on a plane to join Jim in Peru. So I'd never been to South America before, and I was really looking forward to it. Then all of a sudden, and we had heard little, you know, things about, you know, this, you know, horrible virus that was not ever going to touch us, but, you know, it was out there. And I was kind of concerned that we had just gotten word from the school that if people left town, there was going to be a mandatory 14-day quarantine when we returned. Yeah. And that was like going to really interfere with a lot of things. So I thought, well, sure, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And then all of a sudden, like literally all of a sudden, Jim's manager called me and said they just closed the border to Argentina. And I'm going to have Jim cancel the rest of the tour and come back before he gets stuck there. So I was like, close the border. What? And then all of a sudden, my entire support team, meaning I have, you know, 5 kids, as you know, and they go to a lot of different schools, and several of them are not old enough to take the subway or get home. So I have I had a bunch of NYU students that were like my, you know, extended family, who were my sitters, who would go to each little lesson or whatever, and then all wind up back in our apartment at night. And I'd have like all this help, you know, people setting the table, people, you know, laying out the pajamas, and I, you know, because you get a couple more hours of work for these great college students. And all of a sudden, all of their parents started calling them, and they started calling me and saying, we got to go. Like, they're going to shut down Manhattan.
Oh my word.
And, you know, there was, we didn't know what was happening, but we knew that Jim had to come back. We had to lock down. So all of a sudden this, you know, weird Orwellian like thing happens.
Yeah.
So, and without getting too long winded about the point, I just want to let you know that what started happening started to shape how God was calling the Gaffigan family to deal with this pandemic. And so what started happening was, because I've have this team of doctors that I, you know, a lot of stuff went wrong because the tumor was in the brain. So I have a lot of different doctors who all suddenly dropped all their little specialties and went over to the ICU because it was, it was crazy. Mm. And so I have this inside connection, and one of the PAs who has become a physician's assistant, who coordinates a lot of the surgeries and all that stuff, reached out to us and basically said, we're not getting breaks. Not complaining about the hospital, but it's like, we can't,
Here's the reality. Yeah.
It's like a war. It's like a, you know, it's like a wartime situation.
Yep.
And, if there's anything that you can use your platform to call attention to, could someone send us some pizzas? Like, we can't leave. We don't have a lunch break, right?
Yeah.
Waters, like anything. So Jim and I, being in a position of, you know, being, you know, having a lot of Twitter followers or people, and also having some money in our pocket, sent them, you know, Shake Shack for their, you know, when we put out an all call and said, hey, you know, Mount Sinai, New York is getting clobbered, right? So that happened. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I'm a youth group leader, because when I was in the hospital, and I'm Catholic, all right? So when I was in the hospital and I was, you know, struggling with my life, and I write about this in my book, I really felt like I had gotten the little kid thing down. Like, I knew how to do the engagement. Yep. Why do we go to church and all this stuff? And I have a 12-year-old daughter when I went into the hospital, and I had 2 confirmed children already. And there was nothing being offered to them except for, get up, we're going to church. That was it. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And they weren't, I was like, okay, you're doing the collection. You're doing, you know, it was not, there was not a lot of like, you know, on fire for Jesus stuff going on.
Right, right.
So I kind of got, and I talk about this more in my book, and I'm just giving you the quick update, get this conviction that I needed to start a social justice, like something really cool for the teenagers to join up with church. So, and because my other kids were going to, you know, Sunday school, catechism, sure. and all that stuff. But the teenagers were like, well, can we go home? You know, can we go hang out at the park with the, you know what I mean? Yeah. While they're in class. Yeah. So I was like, you know, we need basketball. We need a coach drives. We need outreach. We need, you know, this kind of thing.
Just sure.
Based on the Beatitudes. But so when I came out of the hospital and I was recovering, I had all of this planned and it started to happen, right? As I got better, it was a motivating factor for me.
Absolutely.
So we had this, we started this group called the St. Patrick's Warriors that would do, you know, outreach to the homeless, and we got more out of it than they did, right? Than the people
right.
we were serving.
Right.
So meanwhile, we were in the middle of this amazing project at this time of this pandemic where we were doing a Easter basket for 27 mothers with babies who are experiencing homelessness in a shelter in the Bronx. So this is an amazing program, which is a publicly funded and privately funded small little home in the Bronx that takes in women who are homeless and pregnant or have a child from 0 to 3 and helps them with parenting skills.
Wow, that's finding amazing.
Housing, you know, it's that temporary place yeah. to clean up, right? So we had discovered this place a few years ago because our church did a mission where they did a Advent gift and diaper drive for this place. So we decided, wouldn't it be great if on Easter morning they had Easter baskets, right? We had no idea this pandemic was happening, right?
Right, right.
So we were doing this project. We had also been involved in a project with another group that I started called the Imagine Society, which takes this Warriors as the Catholic group. But what I also found was, is as we did these missions, the kids were saying, well, you know, it's so good we're Catholic and we help people. And I was like, well, you know, the Jewish people help people and the Muslim yeah. people help people and all this stuff. So yeah. it was very important for me to reach out to leaders from these other, you know, interdenominational and interfaith, and some people at the YMCA who don't have a faith, or if they do, we don't know what it is because it's none of our business, and bring these groups together to interact with each other and learn from each other from across the tracks.
Yeah, such a crucial thing. Such a crucial thing.
And this, it was like, you know how sometimes you're like, okay, you know how I describe it a little bit like when you watch like, Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Richard yeah. Dreyfuss' idea of the mountain, and he's making it out of the, I mean, it was yep. that kind of thing. Like, I was just like, you know, I felt like the Holy Spirit was like, all right, do this. And I'm like, but all I want to do is lie in bed and watch Netflix and eat ice cream. I'm exhausted. But it was kind of like, you build this, right?
Yeah.
So we had just done this amazing thing with, and that's called the Imagine Society. And
you can look that up. In one of our first interactions, I think you sent me, I followed them. I think you sent me information about those guys. And one of our first chats was about yeah. the Imagine Society. Yeah.
Okay, so the imaginesociety.org /service, you can check out what we're doing. But anyway, it's an interfaith thing. So we had just done this amazing outreach to, I think it was 20 men who were experiencing homelessness who had been vetted by a couple of the New York City departments of homelessness. Mm. And we did a soup to nuts, beautiful dinner where wow. the kids planned the menu, shop, decorated the dining room, and served and cleared and sat down for fellowship and card games. And I mean, of course, during COVID, like this is not happening right now,
right,
but
it was
this, you know, treating our brothers mm-hmm. like they are royalty, right? It was a 5-star restaurant with the trays and would you like freshly cracked pepper on your salad? It was amazing. Yeah. And so it was this really great training for the kids who wanted to learn kitchen skills and service skills and decorating skills. And there was, it was a production, really beautiful. So we were planning the next one. We were doing with my Catholic group, this Easter basket project. And all of a sudden everything gets shut down. Everything is closed. So one of the other mothers from the Catholic group, Nora Fitzpatrick, who's one of my best friends, has five kids and she works and is crazy like me, called me up and she's just like, listen, how are we going to get this, you know, this Easter basket project done? And I'm like, I have no idea because the baskets are locked in the church. The Amazon registry is all at my house. There's the cards are at Zaylin's house.
Gosh.
And we're all social distance and the shelters in the Bronx. So we set up a Zoom meeting and we strategized on how we could do this. But now, because of COVID and New York, they became wellness baskets, right? So little stuff for babies to rub on their chest if they're sick, thermometers, things were really difficult to get. And so we strategized together and we made this happen, right? And so on Easter morning, people at Sienna House woke up to these Easter baskets, which were wellness baskets now. So simultaneously, this Imagine Society, we outreached to them to get involved in our Food for Fearless program, which I was telling you before about how the hospitals needed support. So the Holy Spirit had a lot of, so all production had stopped, right? And that's my world, right?
Yeah.
Producing. So all these really amazing people that I know who are really good at organizing and mobilizing, who are, you know, set up, you know, filming New York City. Come on. It's the hardest thing in the world.
It is.
So there were all these production food trucks that were not working, but they were the perfect thing because it was very difficult because we started delivering food to the hospital, but then you can't go in. Right. And then all this hot stuff would sit in a conference room getting cold, and who's going to want to eat cold fries when they have like a minute to run out. So and I had this inside connection. So we set up this system where between shifts, there'd be a food production food truck with a hot kitchen sending out meals.
Oh, so that's incredible.
So Jim, my husband, had started this YouTube channel, live broadcast of the Gaffigan family dinner every night at 6 o'clock Eastern time, which we still do, by the way. It's for 7 months. We've done the show. We've done hundreds of episodes of this show where we invite the public to come have dinner with us and our crazy family. And our kids are naughty and they're doing the sign of the cross wrong and grace and all this, which is worth it all experience. Everyone's talking, but
it's the real life part.
It's the real life part. And also there's a lot of people who are quarantined that don't have any interaction. So we've gotten a lot of positive feedback. So at a certain point, we decided to outreach and make everyone part of the Imagine Society. And so if people don't have any money because they're unemployed, they can send us a inspirational poem that we then collect. And once a week, we send it to hospitals, nursing homes. We send it to food companies to go in the basket. So you can see that for some reason, the Lord wanted the Gaffigan family to be in it with the people who are most affected with the pandemic. So it all makes sense, right? It all makes sense because and this is not virtue signaling because I've gotten way more out of this than anyone who got a bag of groceries or a hamburger or a wellness basket. And people who give, right, whether it's money or a donation would be like one of the kids' drawings on Instagram or something like that. Like that's a donation
simple.
Of your time.
Yep.
But also sometimes people are like, look, I lost my job. I don't have any money. I want to help the doctors. So if all these people donate $2, we now can send a meal to, you know, a hospital or a food service to a food pantry. So this has now become this huge thing. And the kids and the teenagers are all working on it. So it has been really a gift to my family. It's elevated the, you know, it's very difficult to be like, oh, I miss my prom. Or I wish, you know, when you're interacting with people who do not have jobs or food or, you know, or love, really.
Yeah.
Who have been forgotten by, because if you thought that the people in New York experiencing homelessness were social pariahs before, tried during COVID, it's like the lepers, right? It's like, oh, the homeless people, they've got to have COVID. We're not going to even give them a smile or a dollar in the cup anymore. So, you know, just forming relationships with bigger organizations like the Bowery Mission. Mm-hmm. So because life went on pause, right? And, oh, darn, I'm not in Peru hiking, you know, it's like, where does God want us? You know, what is this tragedy or what this major, I call them meteors that hit your life?
Yeah.
You know, like getting a son with special needs is like a meteor came down from heaven.
Absolutely.
And hit your life. And so what miracle, what miracle is going to grow out of that crater? Right.
Yeah.
So I think that that's one of the things that, I could sit there and tell you about how, you know, my floors are dirty or how I'm a bad Zoom teacher or how I, you know, threw a bottle of barbecue sauce across the room in frustration. That I could tell you all the stuff that all of us are going through, but I'd rather focus on, you know, how are we listening to what God is calling us to do, even amidst the sort of tragic occurrences of our lives.
Well, and first off, I'm going to put links to all these things on the episode page on the website. So I'll make sure I want to link to your book. I want to link to Imagine Society, you know, and any others you can just send them to me and I'll include them. Cause I think one of the things that, you had mentioned, like life being on pause, but what's interesting, even in days like this, is I think it's almost like our expectations of life were put on pause. And life really has been happening. There is so much, you know, I find that God exists in the moment where you throw the barbecue sauce across the room, just as much as God exists in finding a way to deliver a wellness basket, you know, to a homeless mother in the Bronx. You know what I mean? So there, a lot of our expectations, and maybe that I've talked to friends of mine about how this year it feels like we've all had to take a crash course in grieving, where we don't talk about grief. We don't know how to grieve things that break or that are taken away. And so we're just sort of left with these unfulfilled expectations all the time. But what I really love about the stories that you're sharing are you took sort of this vacuum of expectations that were just removed that didn't have anything to do with you. It's just gone. Now we're not doing this. We're not going to Peru, whatever. I'm not producing this, you know, a show or whatever anymore. And you filled it with all these other things and you brought other people with you. I think one of the most lovely things about leadership is when leaders, they don't helicopter into the top of the mountain and go, hey, you guys come meet me up here. But they make the journey with everyone. I think it's always been so encouraging to watch how you guys live. And I understand that the way in comedy or the public persona, you edit bits, you know, or you frame it in a different way. It didn't quite happen like this, whatever. But what I've always appreciated is how genuine you guys are in the public eye. And what I appreciate about even what you're sharing here today is how it's not a bit. This is not something that you focus tested. You didn't go down to the club on the corner and do it for an audience. Like these are stories of real people and real things and real activities and real purpose and real spiritual life that you are engaged in on a daily basis. That's alive in you. It's not merely a story that you tell, but it's a life that you live. And so I've always been very grateful for that. And, you know, over the years, as we've gone through really challenging things in our family, you know, the laughter that has come from your family has encouraged us through really dark moments. Who you are comes through in all aspects of not only just the, this is who I am in private, this is who I am in public, but who you are as an individual, but then who you are as a family collectively is so genuine. And it means a lot to us. So these stories are so heartening to me. I'm already thinking of different people that I want to make sure hear this, just so they can hear how you guys have taken this moment. And, you know, I mean, one day, hopefully you do get to hike Machu Picchu and do the thing. But, you know, for now you're hiking a totally different type of mountain. As we all are. And so thank you for sharing that, because I it is so, so encouraging. And to that end then, so I am curious though, I mean, you guys are, and increasingly so, you guys are a really public family. I mean, I guess you're comfortable in the skin of that, or maybe you're not, but either way, you're in the public eye. You both are very involved. And I guess, do your kids have any desire to sort of follow in these footsteps, or are they ready just to?
It's like, we are probably going to, you know, be paying a lot of therapy bills. No, I'm kidding. But the thing is that there are some times where, you know, our kids are like, we don't want to do dinner with the Gaffigans tonight. Right. Mm. So on certain days, I'll be like, why not? Right. Why not? Mm. Because we're not, obviously we're not showing off our outfits or our hairdos, right? We are raising money for people who don't have anything. Right.
Right. Right.
And so we are also getting a lot of feedback for people that are like, look, I've never been able to donate a dime to you guys, but I have to tell you, this is my donation to tell you that I live by myself, and being able to have dinner with your family has been so rewarding to me. I'm from a big family. I've been quarantined, you know, I'm sick, blah, blah. And we read it to our kids. Mm. And we say, you know what? It is a sacrifice that we're doing this show and we're doing a fundraiser every night, and that we're sharing, you know, things that, you know, like my son, Patrick, last night, I think it was last night, had written a poem or drawn a picture. And you have the picture. What does this say? We already have the cure for COVID. What does it say? It's safe in our hearts, right? So he drew this picture about saying, you know, it's love. Yeah. That's a cure for COVID, right? Mm. So we went to share it on our show, because people send in artwork. They express themselves, and I don't have any money right now, but I just want to send in a drawing to put in the on the cot of someone who's in the shelter tonight. Yeah. You know, something that says, we're, you know what, the whole world believes in you and tomorrow's a better day and those kind of things, right? To express our solidarity with our human family. Mm-hmm. So my little Patrick was like, I'm too embarrassed to show that. And I was like, Patrick, this is going to help people. This is really, and I'm having the conversation on YouTube. So on one hand, there's a little voice in my head that says, am I like torturing this child who doesn't want to show his drawing on YouTube?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that what we're doing is perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point it might backfire, but we're very honest with our kids. And so for instance, like when it's someone's birthday, we'll say, do you want to do dinner with the Gaffigans tonight? And they'll say, no, I just want to have a private dinner with my family. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we're forcing anyone to do it, but at the same time, it's been so valuable for my kids to be part of this and not in a bubble, because we have enough food, right?
Right.
We have enough internet connections.
Yeah.
We have medicine. You know, we are very, very blessed and we are very privileged. And if we just seal that off from the world, What good is it? What value is that to, what are we creating? Because we have enough people out there, and I shall not name names right now, that are in these positions that are, you know, in positions of leadership who are, you know, it's a product of this kind of narcissistic bubble, and it's not good for our society. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, there, you can, you know, people might judge that we are putting our family on public display. And, but I think that the intention behind it is really good. And then plus I like doing it because honestly, if we didn't have a show to do every night at 6 p.m., they would be having dinner at 11 p.m. Or, you know, I'm having that schedule has been very valuable to me because I literally, like, 2 hours will go by and I'll be like, what did I do? Why is there still laundry? I don't, I have no idea. You know, where's the other sock? Did someone throw it out the window? I don't understand where it went. Like, it's like this kind of weird thing. So having that structure has really helped our family. We sit down together. We say grace. We thank the Lord for our blessings. And we talk about what's going on in the world and what happened in our day. And we take comments from the audience and we play charades. Right. So it might be at a certain point we might say, okay, our kids have had intervention with us and they're like, this must end. Right. So, or we have to only do this on Friday night or something like that, you know, and we'll listen to them, you know? So it's like, yeah, we're out there. And that kind of, you know, was not really a comfortable place to be when all this political stuff came up. Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on going out, you know, on the with the politics. That's not me. I'm not a political person until I am. And then I am. And then it's like, you might not like me anymore, but I just can't. If you guys ask, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, Jim did his thing, you know, which was very uncharacteristic.
By the way, did you have a heads up? Or was he just like one day just...
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Oh, I can't wait.
This is exactly what happened. So I'm managing this bedtime situation, which is, it was August, right?
Yeah.
So August anyway is when you're like, guys, you got to get back on the school schedule. It takes a while to get off of that summer thing, right? It's a very challenging time. Anyway, the pandemic, when you're like, okay, your school is about to start, you're not leaving the house to go to school.
Leaving the house.
Right. Yeah. But so like the transition has to be like, how am I going to design this so you take it seriously and you're not going to your first class in your pajamas, right? It has to be a serious thing. Because believe me, all I want to do is stay in pajamas all day too. Yeah. But I have to, whatever. So anyway, and you'll appreciate this. So my kids over this pandemic and probably, you know, it probably started when I was in the hospital, have developed a healthy addiction to screens. All right. Healthy.
Yeah, I understand.
Healthy in the sense of meaning it's big and puffy, but it's not healthy as in a good sense, right? It's an addiction.
Do you guys I think Jim mentioned one time, and we've talked about this. He said, do you guys still have a lockbox?
Yeah. Okay. So yes. So in New York, we have a safe that is what you would get at like a school when you don't want people to steal your devices. Mm-hmm. So it's like like an industrial thing with slots in it and plugs and we lock it. So when we went to the country, we didn't bring it. And So what I did was I installed a padlock on a cabinet, right? So that is now our lockbox for the screens. So where I was I was sitting on the floor. It's in the master bedroom and I was untangling cords because all the cords get all tangled up every day with the kids.
Somehow.
So I decided to make an exercise where I was saying Hail Marys because that I was very frustrated.
Yeah.
So there were no beads, but I was like, by the time I'm done with like the Joyful Mysteries, I'm going to have all the cords untangled. And so I'm sitting on the floor untangling cords in front of the lockbox, you know, with, you know, my hair, like it looks now, like just I'm not in good shape. And Jim is like, Trump is speaking at the, you know, the Republican National Convention. Do you want to come watch? And I'm like, no. Why do I want to watch Trump speak when I'm untangling cords and I was in a state of peace for the first time?
I am praying right now. Don't interrupt.
So, and also it's like, I just don't, you know, why? I just didn't feel like watching the, you know, I don't, you know, if he was like, maybe something that I would enjoy, you know, but I was basically like, I just took it as an excellent opportunity to give him a guilt trip that he had time to be watching television.
Yeah, I understand. Like,
too busy. Okay. So anyway, doing that. Meanwhile, my sister, Elizabeth, who is number nine child.
Yeah, because you're the oldest of nine.
Number one. I prefer eldest.
Eldest. Okay. Sorry, eldest.
So she, it's vanity.
I'm going to start using it, actually.
Eldest. So she is in Napa, where she has been evacuated from her house in L.A., or she has gone to live with her in-laws, pregnant, 9 months pregnant, and baby's breech. So there's all this like drama. So we have this family text chain with like 20 phone numbers on it where it was,
we have the same thing with mine. Yeah.
You know, baby's breech, you know, there's constantly stuff going on. Right.
Yeah.
So usually when my phone starts to go ding, 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 it's something is happening right on the family text chain. So that starts happening. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Lizzie's like going into labor or something's wrong with the baby or whatever. And I go to the phone and everyone's like, her husband's dropping the F-bomb on Twitter. That's how it happened. That's the heads up I got.
You're in the other room. Like you.
I'm signaling cords. Right. So that's how I learned about it. So I went to Twitter on the app and I saw one of his tweets. I thought it was one, right? Where he was like, F in this and F in that, right? So I immediately cannot believe that my husband dropped me F bomb on Twitter because one of the things about the Gaffigan comedy is that we don't do that, right? Yep. That's a thing.
The clean comic or whatever. Right. Yep. Yep.
So, but it wasn't funny. He was like mad.
Yeah.
And so I said, no cursing, please, or something like that. I was like, diffuse situation. And then he replied to me. So we're on Twitter having a conversation in the same house, but not in the same room. And he's like, okay, fine. Right. I'm like, done.
It's so 2020 of this. Yeah. It's so 2020. Yeah.
So I'm plugging in things, putting the padlock on, ding, ding, ding. I go back. Oh, no. And at this point, I'm just curious. So I check Twitter and he's cursing up a mad storm. So then I go, okay, I tried. You know, I'm like, I'm out of this, right? So that was basically it. So then at a certain point, I walk in to, you know, the other room, like with my like hairbrush or something like the fishwife. I don't know. I had something in my hand. I can't remember what it was. And I was like, the F-bomb on Twitter? I'm like, priests and nuns follow us, Jim. What are you thinking? And he's like, this, blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, so now we're fighting, right? I'm like, what are you doing? Who, like, we don't need to, like, who, like, just, we don't need to do this. And he's like, no, it's injustice. It's, you know, so I'm like, okay, I can't, right? So anyway, the next day, my Twitter feed is like, I'm involved now. People are copying me.
Oh my gosh.
And telling me that I'm like, you know, well, there's also some good, you know, like go for it, Jim, finally, you know,
right. Then
like
right.
you're supporting infanticide, right? Jeannie Gaffigan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Be killer, right?
I saw some of that stuff. It was some of it was really dark.
I was like, wait a minute, where did I go from, you know, Catholic mom darling to baby killer? So I start engaging in it a little bit because I'm a maniac, as we all are if we have a Twitter account. And yeah, so right. I say, you know, I don't, you know, look, I don't condone the way that this is being said, but come on, you guys, why are we even talking about this? It's just like eyes and ears. Do you guys are, you have a brain, you have eyes, you have ears. Like, we all know that this is a mess, that there's, you know, there's rioting in the streets. Yeah. We've, you know, there's a way to handle this and it's not being handled well. And it's certainly not creating further schisms in the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, then a couple people reach out to me and ask me to write something about my experience. So I do. And yeah, the rest is, you know, all of a sudden now I'm thrust into the political sphere. Can I just tag on to this a minute? Because I just want to tell you about like also how the Holy Spirit works.
No, tag, because I want to hear the whole thing, because this whole, seriously, watching you guys evolve even over the last 6-7 months in your public persona has been incredibly encouraging, but also fast. It's like going to the zoo and watching an exhibit in the zoo happening in real time. It's really fun to watch.
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to say that I am a philosopher, a theologian, doctor.
Sure.
I'm just saying this is what my personal experience has been with the state of affairs in our church and our state of affairs in our politics. And all I'm saying is, I'm just a mom, right? In a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just a normal gal. But if we're going off of how is the Holy Spirit, how is God working in our lives? How can we live in our situations and grow from it?
Yeah.
So as I mentioned before, I'm having some challenges with, one of my kids where I have to sort of be very, very present in their learning.
Sure.
Just because if I let it go, it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't happen.
Right.
Right. And then I get a lot of calls from teachers. And I get anxiety and stress. So what that means is that I am sort of going through high school again, in a way, right? I'm seeing this material again and everything. So the evolution of what has happened in my lifetime, because it's like, I don't know about you, but every once in a while, I'm like, I feel like high school was like yesterday. Like,
yeah.
I remember, even though it was a million years ago, like I remember like history and when you know, that it was after lunch and my teacher kicked my desk once because I fell asleep. It was in a humiliating, I remember these things like it was yesterday. Anyway, so my son, who's a freshman in high school, is working on in American history.
Mm-hmm.
So recently, there was a unit on, let's say it was Columbus Day, right?
Right.
And there's also been some exercises in the Constitutional Convention.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So when I was a kid, we put on plays about Columbus Day and we're like, I am Columbus, the hero and the,
right.
Queen, I'll be Queen Isabella
right.
and all this. Right.
Right.
And now they're like, okay, this is what actually happened.
Mm.
Right. So I'm getting all this information at this same time as this whole political thing and this whole like very divisive, church that I'm involved with where we're talking about, pro-life a lot, but we're not talking about racism a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
In certain churches.
Yep.
And, this is all coming like this. And I'm like, okay, why am I reading American history? Right. And seeing that our, country was, even back to like the discovery of America was white supremacy.
Yeah.
The foundation of the Constitution was white supremacy. So it's not like I'm sitting here going, yo, I'm so woke and I'm so, you know, whatever. It's just happening.
Yeah.
Like, this is what, where I'm being reached right now. And it's like, I need to, what is this telling me? What action? What is the call to action here?
Yeah.
Right. So I'm obviously very busy. I'm a mother, right?
But absolutely.
All of a sudden I'm being challenged by people about certain things. And all of a sudden I have historical information at my fingertips because I'm teaching high school, you know. Yeah. It's like, you can't ignore these things.
No,
I didn't go and look up anything. It just sat, it came into my home. And why? So it's not like all of a sudden it's like, you know, because I'm getting like texts from friends who are like, I love this new woke political Jeannie Gaffigan. I'm like, I didn't like wake up one day. People are like, oh, you're selling out to the liberal media elites, Hollywood. And I'm like, no, I'm just a mom, you know, vacuuming snacks all day, crumbs that constantly, you know, and then this is just happening.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't ask for any of this. I was untangling cords so I could lock up screens, just like you.
Yeah.
Just like you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to be asleep when these obvious signs are coming right into my home. So I just want to go on the record and say, I'm not trying to rile people up. I'm just saying, this is like, there's truths that are being presented to me.
Absolutely.
That have changed the lens through which I view things that I didn't look at before.
Yeah.
Right. So things are really popping out to me.
Yeah.
And so when somebody challenges my Catholicism based on, you know, a political party or whatever, I retweet something that someone sends me that says, like, you know, things Jesus was, things Jesus wasn't, right? Like, Jesus was not a white American, you know, things Jesus was. Jesus was brown. Jesus was homeless. Jesus was a protester. You know, there's things that are like documented. And then when I post it and I say, you know, this is something interesting that someone shared with me, then the feedback I get is, well, do we really know for sure he wasn't white? I'm like, that's what you're saying. Like, that's what you got out of this is that you're like, but we're not exact. We think, you know, there's a possibility he could have been white. You know, I have a picture of Jesus in my house that proves he was white because he's white in the picture.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just making a joke.
Yeah.
But basically it's like, are you kidding me that you're, that what different, like, wait, are we all created in God's image? So is that only for, is God, did God create everyone? Or, you know, why wouldn't anybody read God created man and woman in his image and be like, he's only talking to me? So it's like these certain things. It's like, I'm not trying to like stir up any, you know, I'm not a rabble rouser. It's just that, like, I can't understand why, you know, for me, why, you know, we could distort something that's so plain. It's so plain. So, not to say that faith isn't complicated,
you know, absolutely.
And that the Bible isn't complicated,
sure.
But it's like, there's certain things that are, you know, it's like we have big families. We have kids and we want them to, you know, have faith. And my kids are teaching me too,
sure,
about acceptance, right? Because it's like, they're exposing my prejudices, you know, I'll question something and they'll be like, but you said that, you know, that God made everyone. So, you know what I mean? Like, they are challenging me. So I'm like, oh, you're right. So, and the other thing is that, you know, what I was really inspired by the, Jennifer Abel podcast was that, you know, she really got woke, You know, things that made her woke were real life experiences, right? So when she got out of her bubble of her choir, right, preach to the choir, and she started to see, wait a minute, they're faithful people that have helped me and made me grow in my faith, but they're not the people that I was told were good.
Right.
So she, it wasn't that like she went out to start rabble rousing and, you know, going, I want to cause trouble. It was like God spoke to her through, you know, acts of mercy and kindness of other people. And you know, she has a big family too. So when you have that responsibility to your children and you're like, wait a minute. Okay. So Jesus says a lot about not being proud. Jesus says a lot about not abusing people. And, you know, he says a lot about lifting up the poor and welcoming the refugee. Like how does that compute with what is actually happening right now? And how, as a Catholic and as someone who is saying, you know, I want to give my gift of my faith to you. How can I stand by it? You know, unless I'm willing to like put in the hard work and say, you know what, we belong to a organization that and a country that has systemic evil from the get-go. And we've got, and our job is as Christians and as citizens together to root it out. And it's not going to be comfortable. It's not comfortable at all.
No, it's not.
To shake things up, because it's so much easier to say, well, you know, let's just close the curtains and pretend it didn't happen. You know, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable to see. And also, this is just another thing that's totally off the subject, but I want to say something because I don't want to seem like I'm virtue signaling at all.
Sure. Absolutely.
I want to say that when I read, I make a point when I read any scripture, and if I read the scripture of the, you know, the tax collector and the Pharisee about, you know, the Pharisee, the tax collector being like, Lord, I'm a sinner. I did all these bad things. Please forgive me. And the Pharisee saying, Lord, thank you that I'm not like that guy who's bad.
Yeah, it's an amazing.
Why, right?
It's amazing. So
it's an amazing thing. But here's what I'm going to say about that. As I'm sure that people cite that all the time about what's going on, right? When you read a scripture like that with this, with a parable that Jesus is teaching, you got to put yourself in the person he's talking to. How am I that Pharisee? How am I? Because if I'm going to say, see, everyone, you're that Pharisee, and I'm the guy who's saying, I'm the guy who's saying I'm the sinner, but then I'm the Pharisee. Right. By saying that. So I have to say, how am I virtue signaling and say, I'm so good. These people are so bad. So I want to go on the record and say that, because I know I've said a lot of things about the calling out the hypocrites that are, you know, in power and in the churches and in the politics. But also it is necessary before you go there to identify how you're doing it as well.
Yeah. What's the log and the spec.
Yeah. So I have to be aware. I have to say, listen, Matthew, I have a humongous log in my eye. I'm not a great Catholic. I'm not a great mother. I'm severely lacking in my prayer life, but I am trying really hard. And what, for some reason, the Lord, because I believe the Lord is in charge of my life, has put me in this position where all these really weird things are happening in this pandemic. And all of a sudden now I'm out there talking about politics for the first time in my life.
Who knew?
And I have to just listen and pray and say, well, Lord, help me do the right thing here. Because all of a sudden now I'm, you know, people want me on their podcasts about talking about like heavy duty things. That's what I mean. I really like to go back in time and talk about lighter subjects like brain surgery. That was what only people wanted.
Until this year.
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about like tracheostomies and food pegs.
Well,
you know,
but
light stuff, you know.
But I do love about you and Jim and the way that you have shared your humor, your take on the world, your family with the rest of us is I haven't watched the YouTubes of the dinner with the Gaffigans, so I've got to do that at some point. But what I really do appreciate
you got your own dinner with the Chambers over there.
Yeah, it's kind of with the Chambers. We call ourselves the Chambers Village. It's the it's like no devices at the table. So I still am terrible at that role. I appreciate though that you guys I feel like you've invited the world in, and you know, obviously the humor and I mean, there's a gift. There's such a gift there, but it also sort of it invites people in. It's almost like this embrace of join me in my mess and let's go figure it out together. And so I'm very grateful for the voice. And I know that Jim is the one on stage, but I like your fingerprints are all over every word that comes out of the guy's mouth. And I say the guy like we're buddies, but I'm so grateful that you have invited people in the way that you have. And as I close the podcast I know you know this already, is I always ask, how do we have better sex in our communities or in our cities or families or churches or synagogues or mosques? Like, how do we create better sex? How do we have better sex? And so, since I know you have to go, that's my question to you, is how do we have better sex, Jeannie Gaffigan? How do we do it?
Well, I think that one of the things that is really screaming out to me right now is the cross-cultural ministries, cross-racial ministries. And recently, I read this amazing article, which I'll also send to you.
Yeah, please.
With Sam Rocha interviewed Gloria Purvis. Mm. And essentially... they were talking about, you know, racism and how, you know, how it's been so, you know, insidious in our faith and not addressed.
Right.
And, you know, it arose from, you know, this is someone who is a pro darling of the pro-life community on her show Morning Glory on EWTN. Yeah. And after the George Floyd, episode, murder happened. Mm. She started talking about racism being demonic. And, you know, I can't quote it right now because it's not, you know, I have mom brain, but it's, you know, something like it's like racism and abortion are twin sisters of the same evil. You know what I mean? It's like it's a dignity thing. And radio station, I think it was Guadalupe Radio or something in Texas, took her off the air and said that she was too divisive. And they put on that Father Altman, who said that, you know, basically you cannot be a Catholic and vote Democrat on the pulpit.
So that's not divisive?
Not controversial, I guess. So I think that might have been either the reason why the interview happened, or it was about basically the title of the article was the gift of blackness to the church. And can you get me the name of the publication that did it? It was like the Christian, the gift of blackness to the church, Gloria Purvis and Sam Rocha, just so I can get the correct publication, because it's just I have mom brain right now. But anyway,
Church Life Journal.
Okay.
The Church Life Journal. Okay. Yeah, it's a great does long articles, long interviews, wonderful interviews. But one of the things that she brought up is that people are sending their mission, their kids' missions, or their seminarians too far away to other countries, right? Have a missionary experience. And she said, but why aren't people going across the tracks in their own town?
Right.
But I think it's also easy for us to fall into like white savior complex.
Yep, absolutely.
And be like, I went and took care of all these brown people in another country because I'm so good, right? But when you go across the tracks to a different parish and your leader at your white church, and your leader, because let's be honest, there's white churches, there's black churches, even if they're both Catholic, right?
It's amazing.
So if your leadership at your churches can work out some kind of cross-racial ministry, something you both can do together, maybe you both do a food pantry thing together, it's not missionary work, but it's missionary, it's cross missionary work, because you're enriching both cultures. Mm-hmm. And that's how we create better sects.
Yeah.
By cross cultural ministry.
Connecting with your neighbors.
Connecting with your neighbors who are different than you.
Yep. And they think differently, and they might vote differently, and they go to different stores and maybe believe different. I mean, yes, absolutely.
And we can enrich each other's faith.
Absolutely.
By listening and understanding to each other.
Well,
that's what I think. But I'm no genius.
Well, but you're giving us such a gift, and I'm grateful for it. And I think there are people who are given platforms at particular moments that the culture needs to hear from. And I think you and I think Jim are two people who have that platform. And I'm grateful for the way that you're using it. And Jeannie, I'm so glad to talk with you. Thank you for coming on. And it's great to meet
you. Thank you for having me.
And maybe one day we'll all get to see each other in real life and not across computer screens where we have to fight with microphones and all those fun things. So
I can't wait till we walk into some restaurant with our 12 kids.
Can we please do that?
And I think that would be amazing.
I think, yes. So, okay, fine. So that's on the calendar for 2028 or whenever we are finally allowed to come out of our homes. But Jeannie, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Better Sex. If you liked or were challenged by what you heard, you can subscribe to the Sex Therapy List on my website, bettersex.com. BetterSects.com. You can follow us on all social platforms
at BetterSex.
And please like and share this episode with anyone you think would appreciate the conversation. Once again, I'm your host, Matthew Chambers. We'll see you next time for another episode of Better Sex.